Go ahead and get started.
Welcome back.
Before we dive in, I just want to update you on my thoughts on in-class lecture. We heard yesterday from the chancellor that they received some initial results from random testing using spit samples, found about a 5% positive test rate among people who aren't exhibiting symptoms. That was one thing I wanted to wait and see what the results were there before we made any decision. The other concern is somewhat what happens around having our first home football game this weekend. So my current thoughts are if things continue on this trajectory, likely we can give the option for in-class lectures again, but probably hold off until at least maybe Wednesday of next week before making any decision there. If we do go that direction, what I will do is make an effort to ensure that there is minimal discrepancy between attending the lectures in class or online. So somebody brought up in the first few lectures of the course that it was a little bit hard to follow online because I would go to the board and point to things. So I'll try to stick in front of my tablet and give the same experience that it's fully optional to come in and there's no no small discrepancies there between how the content appears in class versus online. Does anybody have any comments on that? Differing opinions? Questions? No. Okay. If not, then go ahead with material for today. So last class we finished up discussion of this active clamp flyback. And today we're going to move into our next topic and we'll begin talking about some of these, what I generally term AC link topologies. So this is a class of converters which are widely used in a lot of high power, high conversion ratio, high efficiency type applications, but the fundamentals of which differ a little bit from traditional pulse width modulated converters like would be covered in 481. So general idea behind these AC link topologies is that we are going to form some sort of a DC to DC converter by combining an inverter, a rectifier, and some kind of passive elements in the middle. So the general structure of these things would look like from the DC input, having some kind of high frequency inverter. Where the output here, which is generally called VP, is a voltage that is purely AC. The current coming through also, in most cases, purely AC. So that we just end up with some high frequency. High frequency depends on the power level, voltage level, maybe 100 kilohertz, maybe multiple megahertz. AC signal coming out of this inverter. Right? So we convert everything from DC up to AC, and then at AC we can run everything through some sort of a reactive network. This will be composed of things like inductors, capacitors, and transformers. And we'll design that network in order to achieve advantageous characteristics generally. So we'll have things like putting elements in there to ensure we can soft switch certain devices, using transformers to help us with conversion ratio, using resonance to help us with general stresses of components. We'll go through a few examples and talk about some of the main ones. But generally, now that everything's AC, we can run it through some LC network, possibly with a transformer in there, without worrying about saturating anything or any issues.
after this passive network, then we've got, because we've got AC in, purely passive network, we'll get AC out, so we'll have some output voltage, VS, current IS, that are still purely AC, but have somehow changed, been filtered, been scaled up and down by this transformer, and then we'll run that through some AC to DC high frequency rectifier. In order to get to our DC output. So this is a general class that I call AC link topologies, just because we're going purely AC in the middle and surrounding it by an inverter and rectifier. This constitutes a whole lot of different converters and a lot of different implementations of those converters. So we can implement each of these three stages in many different ways, or high frequency inverter, maybe something like a full bridge of transistor devices. It does need to be active switches. For the inverter, maybe we do something like a full bridge here. We may do something like a half bridge. Half bridge, we'll have generally half the voltage coming out of it, switching between 0 and VG here. What would be VP? Since that's got some DC bias to it, we'll need to somewhere put in a DC blocking cap to get our purely AC waveforms that we're talking about going into this passive network. Can look at other things like doing a three-level half bridge. The four devices stacked is a flying capacitor, three-level half bridge. We have some DC cap here, DC cap here coming out to VP. We could do a three-level full bridge where we'd have two of these phase legs and be able to get rid of this DC blocking cap. A lot of other options, particularly if we look at integration with some of the passive network, things like center tap transformers, in order to get our AC waveforms. So different hardware options for how we implement this inverter. Most topologies will operate pretty similar independent of how we implement this, or we often name the topology according to how the passive network is implemented. So we could have something like a just inductor in the passive network. We would end up with at least non-resonant waveforms during the majority of operation in the passive network. Then we start looking at different resonant implementations. We have a series LC. Generally, with an inverter and rectifier tacked around that, we'll call that a series resonant converter. Parallel resonant converter operates similarly. Where we've got a shunt capacitor now, form of parallel resonance, where both cases we've got VP, VS for our implementation of this passive network. And then one that received a lot of interest of late is the LLC network. We've got some LS, LP, and C. This is generally called LLC, and a converter with this as the passive network we call an LLC converter. LLC generically operates similar to the series resonant converter, but uses this additional shunt inductor to get a little bit more current available for zero voltage switching, depending on the operating point. just an inductor in the tank. It's now a non-resonant tank network, may resonate with capacitances of the primary side switching devices or secondary side switching devices. It's generally a non-resonant tank. Operation with just this sort of series inductor is generally called the dual active bridge converter, and we'll talk about that one first among this class of topologies. Here I'm only showing implementations based on inductors and capacitors. Any one of these we can then add a transformer to. So possibly plus a transformer on any of them. We want to get some added conversion ratio in the converter, the transformer turns ratio to help out with that, or if we need isolation. Okay, we're on the secondary for a rectifier. Can have things like general voltage doubler rectifier. Pair of diodes, any of these rectifiers, we can also, any diodes can be replaced with FETs if we want to have a little bit more control and a little bit smaller conduction losses. Obviously do a just full bridge diode implementation or FET implementation. Do things like semi-active implementations where we, instead of replacing all of the devices with FETs, we just replace a pair, high side or low side devices in a full bridge with FETs. It's generally useful when we want to have a little bit of control, get a little bit smaller conduction losses, but not deal with all the problems of generating a high side floating gate drive. Do a semi-active where both of our FETs have grounded sources, run simple gate drives on them. If we have a transformer and can integrate into it, something like a center tapped implementation can be useful, where we can get a full bridge type waveform without having to have four devices by using a center tap on the secondary of any transformer back in the passive network. It's all coupled onto something. Okay. These are just a few examples. There are many more ways to implement these things, but generally we can approach them in a similar way. Any of these inverters will generate some kind of AC square wave voltage that's going to be impressed upon the tank that may be of amplitude VG or VG over 2 if we're a half bridge. VG over 4 with the 3-level half bridge just can change and scale things, but they'll kind of operate in a similar manner. Same thing with the diode rectifiers. We may get a factor of 2 somewhere in the conversion ratio of the diode rectifier. May get some differing stresses, but generally they'll be reflecting back to either a square wave voltage or current. And with both of these, I'm showing voltage source type topologies for the inverters and rectifiers. Could also have current source type topologies. For example, if I put a big filter inductor right here on this diode rectifier, then the output will hold more or less a constant current, and it'll be keeping a constant square wave current at IS instead of a square wave voltage at IS if I just have a big capacitor here. Change things around slightly, but operation is pretty comparable regardless of implementation. Main differences in how these converters operate will come from how we actually implement the tank. So any questions on that? Talk about the first one, lead into the dual active bridge, used as this concept of a DC transformer, which is basically saying, okay, one way. There's teach introduction to power electronics. We generally start with the buck converter. It's simple to understand. You kind of create a square wave and filter it down. Perhaps even a more intuitive way to create your initial DC to DC converter is to say, transformers are really good at stepping up and stepping down voltages, so why don't we just from DC invert to AC, run it through a transformer, nothing else, and then rectify it back. So let's say we did something like that, where that is, say, a full bridge frequency inverter. The output is some square wave voltage, and I just run that into a transformer. And then a full bridge diode or FET high frequency rectifier. Over to my output. Okay. So the idea here would be to let the transformer do all the work of generating any kind of conversion ratio out of this converter. Say V over VG, our conversion ratio is equal to N, the turns ratio of the converter. And let the transformer do all the work, then the only job of my switches in the circuit is just to get me into AC because I don't want to saturate the transformer. So I can look at waveforms of this in the kind of ideal case. We got VP, VS, IP, and IS. And I'll sketch voltages here over one period. Let's say from our full bridge inverter, we just run a 50% duty cycle square wave. I generate some voltage that looks like this. Goes between VG and minus VG if it's a full bridge. And this is VP. And then over here at VS, I'll get that same square wave just reflected through the transformer, which may scale up or down depending on the conversion ratio. Let's just say that it scales down for a moment. And I'll get this same waveform just scaled according to the transformer turns ratio. So I have NVG minus NVG. Here, zooming in less than one. Okay, what about our currents? Our currents will just go the opposite way. If I look at currents over here, IP would be some square wave current, assuming we have constant power delivered to the load. The, say, IG minus IG. And then based on the transformer turns ratio, if our voltage scaled down by power balance, our current's going to scale up. We have some current IS. It looks like this. Must be IG over N. IG over N. Okay. I can label IP. And assume for the moment that there's no issue with this, that this thing works well. If we could do all this, this thing is actually, in some sense, like the ultimate converter here. Okay. What we're doing is we're letting the transformer do all the work of this conversion ratio. Transformers can be made very efficient, particularly if we're willing to sacrifice a little bit on size. And we have almost the minimum possible stresses on all the components in this converter. Look at kind of the input. We have whatever DC voltage and current we need to get to our power, whatever power we want to deliver to the load at some voltage and some current, or PN is constrained just by before we even design a topology. And then if we look at the voltage and current coming out of this full bridge, well, it's just VG minus VG current, just IG minus IG. So any of the devices in here in this full bridge are only seeing the theoretical minimum stresses. Like a buck converter where all the devices see the full output current during part of the period, have higher peak current stresses than the amount of average current they deliver. Here, everything's peak stresses are just either VG and IG, or on the secondary, it's whatever the output voltage is and whatever the output current is, this IG over N and NVG. So stresses are theoretically minimum. There's theoretically no ripple because we're just taking the input voltage, switching it back and forth, stays constant during the first half period, goes through the transformer, and is unfolded by the secondary rectifier. So there's almost no ripple on anything. So if we could build this thing and have it work, this would be awesome. Problem comes into play when we consider real implementation and real components, and we can think of it in two ways. The first is, how would I control this thing? How would I regulate it? If I have changes in load and I want to be able to change the power flow in order to regulate a voltage, as is, we have no way to do that, right? I have to always just switch the inverter synchronously with the rectifier so that I get AC in the middle. I have no control available in the system. Second, and kind of really talking about the same issue, is what happens if I consider a real transformer implementation where I would have some magnetizing inductance of the transformer. Generally, I can make that really large such that it has negligible current and I don't care about. But like we looked at with flyback, I'm always going to have some leakage inductance as well. And I can make it really small. Ideally, I'd like it to be zero, but I can never actually get there. We'll have some leakage inductance of this transformer. It's going to be present in the system. And then when I start talking about operating in this manner, I can look at it and say, okay, what's the voltage on this leakage inductance, V sub L? And if I stick with the waveforms I've described in my initial argument here, where VP is just the input switched at 50% duty cycle, and VS was zero phase shift and just the scaled version of that input. So VS reflects back through the transformer and gives me back VP. So that would mean, okay, the voltage across this inductor is zero all the time. And therefore, it has some kind of DC current in it. Current is not changing with time. And that current had better be zero, otherwise my transformer is saturated. So I have zero power going through this thing at all times if I start up and just stick in this mode of operation. Okay. So to get away from that, what we'll have to do is introduce some way of impressing voltage across this leakage inductance. And then we're going to get slightly away from these nice ideal waveforms. One typical way is to put some phase shift between the switching actions of the primary and secondary. So talk about shifting by some time t phi, the switching actions of the secondary. So now my Vs prime, I have some new secondary side voltage that looks like this. Say it's roughly the same amplitude, but just gets shifted to the right a little bit. What that does is creates an interval here where we do have high voltage across the inductor. My new VL, assuming I can keep more or less the same voltages, would look something like this. Where this is T phi, this would be the same T phi if I keep a 50% duty cycle, but I've just shifted it. And that voltage shows up across the inductor, and then now assuming everything balances out in AC, we can say, okay, we will get some current in this inductor, but it'll have a shape that looks more like, say, our new primary current, IP prime, would look like this. More of a trapezoidal wave shape. And how should I do that? It should go here. Where we now have these intervals where we're applying voltage across it, and the slew rate of the inductor current is not infinite because we now have some inductance in there. Instead, it's VG plus VG, this NVG reflected back through the transformer divided by L. So it'd be 2VG over L across this. Okay. These waveforms stay as I've drawn them here. We would end up getting slightly lower power out of this thing, because now as I rectify this, I've got some amount of time where I have less than IG current at the primary, so my total average power delivered to be less. If I want to get the same power through, it means because of this interval where I'm ramping, I have to go up to a little bit higher peak current. And now I don't have this nice characteristic of having the theoretical minimum stresses everywhere. Got a little bit of higher current stresses on my devices than is absolutely necessary to get the power through. Okay. So what we've created here is the dual active bridge converter. And we'll kind of go through and look at different aspects of it, its operation in some detail. DC transformer concept can create a lot of good high efficiency converters used in a lot of different applications. They're particularly useful in high step up or high step down applications. If we use something like a buck converter, we'd be at an extreme end of duty cycle and pay the penalty on semiconductor utilization. You're letting the transformer do the majority of the work. We can get relatively high step up and step down without too much trouble. We start going above about a 10x step up or step down. The details of the implementation of that transformer and trying to get good coupling between two windings that are widely separated in number of turns causes it to be a little bit more difficult to create. This term DC transformer or DCX refers to something where we've got this general approach of making a DC to DC converter by just converting to AC and letting the transformer do the work. Often when you see this term come up, it will be in combination with thinking about the converter as being unregulated, so that as a whole, the input-output relationship of it just looks like what a DC transformer would do, that the output voltage is just a fixed ratio of the input, some effective turns ratio. In this case, it would be if, okay, we just didn't regulate the output voltage and just let the conversion ratio always be equal to N, the turns ratio. So if the input voltage goes up, the output voltage goes up proportionally, just leave it unregulated. I can do a little bit in terms of reducing control complexity and let you operate at very high efficiency operating points if you don't rely on this converter to do any regulation. Depending on your application, you may need something else to handle the regulation in the system then. But not always. The transformer could be regulated as well. Oftentimes when you see the term come up, people will be thinking it's unregulated though. Okay. So here's just an implementation of this dual active bridge converter. Dual active bridge generally has two active bridges, most commonly a full bridge, though it could be something else, could be half bridges. And then in the tank, the dual active bridge will generally be talking about just a transformer and considering some leakage inductance that may either be a discrete element or maybe integrated just the leakage inductance of the transformer. Depending on the design, we may want to supplement it to actually get larger inductance once we dig into how to design this converter. Okay. So there is always some magnetizing inductance, finite magnetizing inductance for any transformer. So we'll have some LM integrated as part of this transformer implementation. Generally, LM is much, much greater than LL, and we can neglect it in the majority of our analysis of this converter. That is subject to actually implementing the transformer to make sure that's true, and what your operating conditions are, whether you can neglect any current ripple that develops from putting a voltage across LM. But we'll start out and look at analysis neglecting this LM. So here I'm showing plots of the switching waveforms of an example dual active bridge. This is under two conditions. So one, these are what the waveforms look like when V over VG is equal to, in this case, NT. So the conversion ratio is just equal to the transformer turns ratio. The transformer is doing all the work of giving us our voltage conversion. And then it's operated in this, let's say, is PSM here, or phase shift modulation. Just means it's switched and controlled in the way we kind of showed here, where the main control variable is just changing the phase shift between a 50% duty cycle primary side voltage waveform and a 50% duty cycle secondary side voltage waveform. There are alternative modulation schemes where we change not just the phase shift between the two, but also the duty cycle or different details of each of these two waveforms. But here, just showing some 50% duty cycle waveform on VP, that is VG and minus VG, depending on the switching state of these four devices. Same thing over on the secondary with some phase shift between them, TV. Okay. This is assuming a small step-down converter for these waveforms. We get out of it is an inductor current that has this trapezoidal shape that we sketched in the previous slide. And then here I'm showing IO, this current here, which looks like a rectified version of the inductor current scaled through the transformer. So IL of T goes through the transformer, gets scaled up or down, but keeps the same wave shape. And then going through this rectifier, we get something that looks the same, but is just commutated at points when the secondary side switches. Whenever the secondary side switches, we'll flip the polarity which this current goes to the output. So what you notice, and that's generally true about these AC link converters, is that they exhibit certain types of symmetry. As with any power converter, everything should be symmetric about one full period. So in steady state, we have symmetry about one full switching period TS. That's how we get to steady state. When you're periodically switching, the waveforms look the same every period in steady state. We also will have half cycle symmetry. I just look at, for example, this half period. Of operation. Compare it to, be a little bit further out here, the previous half period. All of the waveforms exhibit some kind of symmetry across the half period. If I look at like I out, have the exact same waveform in each of the half periods. It's just symmetric about the half period. It's got kind of some double frequency ripple, or every half period I get the same waveform. If I look at something like IL, you see that I've got some waveform in this half period. In the previous half period, I just have the negative of it. So that exact same waveform just flipped upside down. And the same is true for things like VP and VS. So for VS, during this half period, I'm constant, just V out. During the previous half period, I'm negative V out. For VP, some switching action in the middle here. The previous half period, I have that same switching action at the same point in the period, but flipped upside down. Okay. So in these types of converters, all AC waveforms are half period anti-symmetric. you know, across a half period, you get the exact same waveform just flipped, and all DC waveforms are half period symmetric. So DC waveforms are anything out here and out here. AC waveforms, anything over here in the tank. So because of this, we can largely just look at a half period of converter operation in order to examine it, and then just know, okay, in the next half period, everything AC is going to be the negative of what I just looked at. Everything DC is going to be exactly the same. It's all assuming that everything is purely AC in the tank. If there is any small DC bias to things, this will fall apart a little bit. That DC bias will show up as offset between each half period. But you know, something like a transformer, it's very important that you keep DC out of the tank. That's a detail that needs to be enforced in design and in operation to make sure that the transformer doesn't saturate. But we'll talk about that actual implementation a little bit later, but important that you achieve it in order for this thing to continue operating. There can be residual amounts of DC currents, but there are things to be minimized anyway in operation. So generally a good approximation to say there's none there. So let's look at actual operation of this dual active bridge converter. And what I'm going to do is, this is kind of ideal operation, assuming all the switches are ideal. The next slide, I'm going to start looking at, okay, what happens if we want to look at the impact of CDS capacitance of all of these FETs. So I'll assume that on the primary side, since all four, Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4, since all of these have the exact same voltage and current stresses, we'll assume they're all the same device, and we have some kind of primary side CDS capacitance. So all of these will have the same value of this CDS. But on the secondary side, it may be different. Over here, depending on the conversion ratio, may have higher or lower voltage rating devices, or a step up or step down converter. But again, among this group, all four of these devices have the exact same stresses. So we have no reason to implement them differently. We'll assume that all four of the secondary side devices have the same drain to source capacitance, are the same part number, same implementation. Okay. So if we want to look at the impact of these capacitances, see that, like we looked at with that introductory DCM boost, it's a good thing when we're considering these CDS capacitances to have current waveforms that change polarity, so that when devices turn on, we can have a current polarity that will discharge that capacitance. When the opposite device turns on, current needs to switch polarity so we can discharge that capacitance. If we want to get zero voltage switching of everything, current needs to change polarity. That's one reason why these AC link converters are suitable for very high efficiency operation, is because our current going through the tank is changing polarity every period. So there's at least some possibility that we can zero voltage switch everything, as long as we can make sure when the current is high, we're trying to turn on the device whose capacitance would be discharged by that current. The current's less than zero, trying to turn on the device, that the associated device that has a possibility of achieving zero voltage switching. So in fact, with dual active bridge, we can do that. If everything's designed correctly and we meet all the constraints, we can get waveforms that look like this. I'm now breaking things up a little bit more in order to look at, okay, instead of a perfect square wave on VP and VS, assume we have some kind of resonant transitions, some kind of dead time interval, where in this case we are obtaining ZVS as drawn. These are waveforms are drawn for something like a high step down converter, where we've got a low voltage and very high current on the secondary. So the secondary dead time where we get ZVS goes really quick. The primary side is high voltage and low current, so we have a relatively slow ZVS transition here. So we've got in one half period, and based on the arguments of the previous slide, I really only need to look at the first half period. Everything in the second half period is going to be symmetric. These four intervals, this is my phase shift. What was our T phi interval when we neglected these switching transitions? And then this is my main kind of power delivery interval. Intervals 2 and 4 will correspond to what we saw here during this T phi and then the rest of the period. And then what we've inserted are these two dead times. Interval 1, the primary dead time. And interval 3, my secondary dead time. And with the way we're operating this inverter during that dead time, for example, the primary dead time, all four of these devices turn off at once. So as we're switching to generate the square wave, we have Q1 and Q4 on when we have positive VG, and Q2 and Q3 on to get negative VG. So at that switching transition, we shut all four of them off, kind of always operating the catty corner devices together. Okay. So when I analyze what the circuit behavior is during those dead times, we look at what happens in the circuit. So when I switch all four of these devices off, what is the equivalent circuit? Okay, if I have all of them off, my primary bridge will look like this. The device is off. I just have their capacitances in the circuit. I do some shorthand instead of CDS, comma P. I'm just going to write CP. LL, and then the rest of the tank. Okay, so we've got these four capacitances and a DC source, but we can simplify things a little bit. Look at, okay, what is the current path going to be? Okay, so any current from IL is going to flow back. It's going to split between these two capacitances. Since the same current is here, anything that goes off to the right has to come back. Going to split between these two capacitances, so actually nothing flows through VG if everything is matched. This current splits here and then returns here. In fact, our current path is like this, and the current basically here flows through two of these caps in parallel, splits between them, and then it always flows through two caps in series. So the equivalent circuit look like, we can say first, let's put all these caps in parallel. So I'll get rid of this VG source, just choose the low side to put everything in parallel with. Got two caps in parallel, 2CP, 2CP, my inductor and the rest of the circuit. And then based on what I'm left with, these two caps are purely in series. So my equivalent circuit is just CP on the primary. So when I shut all four of these devices off, what I'm going to see is effectively just one capacitance across VP. And that capacitance is equal to any one of these four capacitances. Okay. Important thing is, with this equivalent circuit, this voltage is VP. So I've done a parallel combination of all four of these at this port right here. So this CP capacitance is not any one of these four. The voltage on it will be different than any of these four capacitances. It's a series parallel combination of them. Turns out that the effective capacitance there is the same as the capacitance of any one of these four, but it'll actually have double the voltage on it of any of them because it is VP, the difference between these two voltages. Okay. Same thing will be true on the secondary. When I switch off all four of these devices, I'll see effectively CS across VS here during the secondary dead time. So with that, we can kind of sketch our AC equivalent circuits and then make our way into state plane analysis of this converter. So for our four intervals here, say one, primary dead time, two, phase shift, three, our secondary dead time, and four, our power delivery interval. What is the AC equivalent circuit here? Okay, so during the primary dead time, we just argued what we end up with here is just CP. Okay, during all of these, the tank is constant. So I've just plotted the tank or made four copies of the tank schematic here for each of these four intervals. Over on the secondary, interval one, our bridge is still on. It's locking the voltage at VS to minus Vout. So we'll have source here, minus plus Vout. We go through this resonant transition in interval two. Nothing's changed over on the secondary. This Vout source connected at a negative polarity. But we've gone through our resonant transition. Our primary has ended up at VG, and the devices turn on and lock it there. So now we have some non-resonant interval with just constant voltages on both sides of this transformer. Then, without doing anything on the primary, we shut off the secondary side devices after this phase shift. What we'll end up with is the secondary side capacitance connected in circuit here, and some resonant circuit between LL and CS that kind of goes through this transformer. That causes some resonance that brings the secondary side voltage up to plus V out. Primary stays the same, so in our final power delivery interval, have VG and V out. So as we go through and analyze, we've got as two non-resonant intervals. Where all of our waveforms will either be constant or linearly ramping. And then two resonant intervals. Oops. Excuse me. I wrote these things in the wrong place. My two non-resonant intervals are 2 and 4. My two resonant intervals are 1 and 3, the two dead times. But importantly, the resonance is between different elements in our two resonant intervals. So in the primary dead time, we're resonating between LL and the primary side capacitance. So we'll have some example R0. And our normalization is LL over CP. But down here in the secondary dead time, our resonance circuit has changed. It's now a resonance between LL and CS going through this transformer. It could simplify and reflect CS through the transformer. CS will scale by NT squared, scale downwards. But the general resonant circuit there is different. It's going to have a different characteristic impedance, different resonant frequency, and different dynamics. You have kind of a, call it R naught prime is equal to root LL over CS over N squared. So for applying state plane analysis, what do? Well, we can go through different intervals, and we've done that in many converters, some of them resonant, some of them non-resonant. But so far, it's always been the same resonant elements. Since R naught dictates our normalization, we said V base can be whatever, but I base has to be V base over R naught. If R naught is changing, that means our normalization can't be the same across these two intervals. And what we're going to end up doing is we'll have actually two different state planes. Okay? One where we look over at the primary side voltage waveforms, normalize with respect to this R naught and the resonance of these two elements. And one where we have to normalize according to the secondary dead times characteristic impedance and resonant elements. We'll have a MP versus JL state plane and an MS versus JL state plane, and different normalizations in both, different I bases selected in both of these. Potentially could select different V base too. So we'll go through sketching out those two state planes next time. Thanks everyone. I'm gonna go ahead and end the recording.